Welcome, and thanks for joining me today on Mortgage Manager Playbook, a podcast for sales leaders who want to improve their team's sales performance and originate more loans. I'm Pat Sherlock, your host. Today's topic is don't accept poor sales results. It's a fabulous topic, and I'm so thrilled to have Jen Ponikowski. Jen is with the Center for Practical Management. She's had a long career in the credit union space and previously was with Credit Union One. I'm thrilled to talk to you today about this important topic of not accepting poor sales results, but I think that it just doesn't make sense, but I know it's a topic you see and I see a lot. But before we jump into that, let's talk about how did you get into the world of mortgage lending?
Sure. So hi, Pat. Thanks so much for having me. So I started in mortgage at a very interesting time. I actually worked at a branch at a credit union just as a teller and relationship manager. Oh. And I had an opportunity to start originating in their HELOC department. Mm-hmm. Then I was recruited by a CUSO to become licensed to become a mortgage originator. So I did that in the wonderful year of 2008.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I still wonder what I was thinking, but I stuck it out. I learned a lot immediately, but from there I just progressed in my career. So after I worked at the CUSO, I went and worked at a different credit union where I started managing, and I worked mm-hmm. my way up into senior leadership positions, and mortgage just kind of had me. So,
well, that's an interesting story, similar to so many others. And so, and I know now that you're in the consulting world and you see a lot. So I want to ask this question. What do you think lenders should be focusing on that you see that they're not? I find this an interesting comment. So,
yeah. So I don't know. I look at, you know, a lot of the challenges that were in this industry. And I think something, again, my background has been working with financial institutions. And I think that we've had kind of a difficult time pivoting to looking at purchase market share and increasing uh-huh. purchase market share. It's hard. I think we've just over, if you look at the last, you know, decade or so, we've been in this refi boom kind of over sure. and over again. And I've seen that it's been really, really difficult for lenders to kind of pivot from there. But I also kind of think it starts from the top. I don't see a lot of leadership kind of investing in the appropriate training or the appropriate support so that they are able to understand how to navigate in this new environment. And, you know, this environment now has gone on for years and years and years. And I still see, you know, that there's some challenges in that area.
Well, they're always hoping for refis. That's for sure. I see that all the time. So what do you see in 2025 as kind of the hot topic at lenders?
I think affordability is it's an issue now, and it's going to continue to be an issue next year and probably the year after that. You know, I know that rates always a hot topic that bores me, but I honestly think it's going to be affordability and how we help our consumers get into new homes, how to just, it's just tough. How the cost of everything is high. The cost of new construction is high. The cost of purchasing existing homes is high. And, you know, our interest rates aren't going to plummet down to where that, you know, HOA dues are increasing. So there's a lot of challenges when it comes to affordability.
Well, you're exactly right with that. And I definitely see the same thing. And I think so many lenders were hoping that the next year would be, you know, much lower rates, and it does not look like that's going to happen. So let's kind of jump in and do a deeper dive on our topic, which I love this topic, is don't accept poor sales results. And one would think that managers would not be accepting that, but share kind of your thoughts on it and why you think this happens. And we'll talk about how we can change all that.
Sure. So I think there's a couple different layers to this. So first of all, I think it comes from what we're doing now. It's towards the end of the year. So we're looking at budget season, right? And we're looking at setting goals and, you know, minimum expectations for what our teams need next year. So how are those being distributed? So, you know, now we have this time to reflect on our teams, you know, what they've done, kind of what their production was for this year. So how are we pivoting and moving into 2025 mm-hmm. and how are we assigning those goals? It's not funny, but it's kind of eye-opening that when I've talked to a bunch of sales leaders recently over the last few months, I pose that question, how do you set your team's goals for next year? And they're like, well, finance says we need to do X amount a month for the year, and they just divide it by 10 and, you know, assign those out to their 10 loan officers. Well, I am pretty certain that those 10 loan officers have very different skills. And I think that it, by doing that, you're not setting these goals to motivate those employees. So if you think of just like the four quadrants of kind of production type, you're going to have, you know, that individual that constantly exceeds expectations. And then maybe you're going to have somebody that, you know, maybe starts off a little bit slower throughout the year, but they progress during the year. And then maybe you have that kind of like inconsistent Nancy that just, you know, one month they're doing one deal and the next month maybe they're doing seven. And then you have that final person that is just really, really struggling to hit their goals. So now if we're looking at how we're going to assign what their expectations are next year, why would we break those up evenly and give them to them? And I just feel like it's setting certain folks up for failure. So you have those, you know, individuals that are exceeding expectations that aren't going to be motivated because this is boring, right? Like my, and you know, depending on what your comp is, that's boring. And then you have the folks that are struggling that are like, well, I'm never going to be able to hit my minimum expectations. So I think that is the first kind of key to kind of setting the teams up for success is looking at what is achievable for them and what will motivate them to produce effectively.
So why do you think managers don't do that? I mean, this is what you're describing is well known in goal setting, but you're right, it doesn't happen. And why don't you think it happens? It is a mystery of life.
I wish I knew why it didn't happen. I just don't think that there's this level of accountability that's just not being distributed throughout the teams. And maybe that's even going for the managers that are setting those goals as well. Like, are they being, you know, held accountable? If you have a bunch of folks that aren't consistently producing within what their goals are, I mean, you have to look at the manager. So why are they not doing that? I don't know. I also feel like they're should be a certain level of investment in training and support to ensure that your teams are getting there. I've been a huge advocate in my entire career, always bringing in a third party or an outside, not just trainer, but someone to really teach activities. You know, we talk about individuals pivoting into this purchase market. I've had really, really great originators, really great originators that when it came time for them to start building relationships with builders and realtors, they came to me and they're like, I don't even know how to strike up a conversation with a realtor. How? And I think we just have this expectation like, oh, they've been a lender for 5 years. They know what to do. We're just going to let them go and hope for the best. And that's not setting them up for success at all.
Well, you're hitting on one of my favorite topics. I have to come back and again, in the only industry that doesn't really monitor the training investment, I would have to say, is the financial services. They view compliance training as training, and they really aren't doing management or selling training. And I see this every day, and I'm sure you see the same thing. So when you look at and when you think about, I know the data from Ingenious, and I've seen it from other data management companies, is that 50% of the loan officers or your salespeople aren't really, basically, they're only generating 8% of the business. So we have this squadron of people that fit into what you were talking about that probably starts with the failure of goal setting. Is that your thinking?
I truly believe that that is. And it's and so fine, you have these goals, but then what are the activity goals that you're giving your teams to make sure that they're able to meet those expectations? So fine, we can give out goals all day long based on past production and skill, but what activity goals are we giving them? It's not we can't just be setting production goals. We should be setting up activity goals. They should, you know, training on how to overcome objections. There's a lot of different layers to being able to support your teams hitting those goals.
So when you see this, and how often, and again, I'm in lenders too, I don't see a lot of activity management. I see a lot of unit management and mortgage, like that's the end point of an activity, but the actual activity management, talk about maybe what you see on the lenders that do it well versus lenders that don't do it well.
Well, it's just that the lenders that do well have consistent activities, they have consistent coaching, they have consistent training. Some of them have outside coaching and training. A lot of those folks, again, have companies that support third-party assistance, maybe a mentorship program. Well, I was part of that as an example out of a bank off the East Coast, and I would meet with this loan officer that was struggling on a biweekly basis. And it was just this. He worked at a financial institution and didn't even think, like, maybe I should start meeting with the bankers that worked at the branches because they see so many people, give them some training and cues just to get a simple referral. I mean, this seems kind of, you know, and that was something I had always set up as a sales manager. But this person was so grateful for just this outside of the box idea. And he ended up by the end of the year just crushing it. Now he's a manager. Now he's a salesman, a producing sales manager. Wow. And he's progressed so quickly just from 6 months of biweekly sessions and coaching. And it just changed. So I think that's an example any successful officer would say. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about one of the fundamentals. And what do you actually see? Do managers, it's expected that managers will do this, that managers will be the activity manager, they'll be the producing manager, they'll be the training instructor. Is it by definition that we're expecting too much from an individual to do all of those activities?
Yes. And it is too much. And it's too much on them. Mm-hmm. There's also this sort of, if I'm an employee, I'm a loan officer, I'm a processor, and I feel that my company has, you know, invested in extended type of training, or they have, you know, brought someone mm-hmm. in to help me, or they've connected me with a different type of mentor outside of the walls of our building. Now I'm feeling like I'm invested in as an employee. And now there's kind of like this cultural shift, right? Where mm-hmm. I am backed by management that wants to support me. But that's where the manager has to go to their senior leadership and say, hey, you know, I can't mm-hmm. do it. There are lots of options out there in the industry where we can help support our folks.
So when you look at, and what I see is that the P&L unit is typically at the branch level. And mm-hmm. so the corporate investment is never really allocated or very minimal. The compliance side is in their side of it. Mm-hmm. And then you're expecting it to happen at the branch level, and it's really not going to happen. And you don't see, and maybe you could share with lenders that you see do it well, because one of the comments that people make, and I hear this all the time at the executive level, if I train them, they'll leave me. I'm training them for somebody else. I mean, I'm sure you've heard that. They always are saying that if I make that investment, they'll just leave me and then somebody else will get the benefit of the investment that they made. What's your thoughts on that?
I have personally heard that many of times from leadership. My answer to that is make them not want to leave you. Right. Create this culture, create this environment that they don't want to leave. They like working for you. I mean, we're going to see this, you know, coming next year. And we're already seeing it, just like some of the big lenders throwing a bunch of money at these great producers. That's always mm-hmm. going to be a problem in our industry. But I think that if we're looking at kind of like this post-COVID environment, people are starting to want, they're caring more about the culture that they're in and the environment that they're in and feeling supported. Mm-hmm. So my answer to that is give them a place that they want to stay. I feel like if you're training and educated, you're providing a benefit to that person. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to leave unless they don't like working there. Like it's, and to be honest, if they're that type of person that is just a money chaser, you're going to lose them one day anyways. It's just the fact of the matter. So I'm such an advocate on in investing in your teams.
But it's throughout the industry, not just in particular companies, but pretty throughout, that they look at training as something that they'll do if they have to, but putting it as part of their culture, you don't see that. I mean, frankly, you hope it was different, but reality is that the investment doesn't seem to be there. And then when you look at the actual turnover numbers in our industry, part of it, especially when you have 50% of the loan officers not doing a lot of production, less than 10%, that you're talking about, I either shouldn't have hired them or I need to, in essence, understand where is that skill gap and I have to fix it. And hoping that it will fix just doesn't happen. So talk about that. And doesn't this come at the senior corporate level? If they have that view that I'll just buy somebody, then it's not likely they're going to invest.
Yes, I completely agree. So I look at it. So let's think of how many individuals were put into management or leadership roles just simply because they were good at their job. So they're like, great, you're really good at your job. So now start managing people. Well, how are you trained to be a manager? Are you given training to be a manager? How to manage people? I wish I had a statistic for individuals that would say I have no idea. I didn't know how to manage when I was brought into a management role. And you know, my firm, I was grateful, hired a third party company that taught management training to us, and goal setting and all of these things that helped me. But it is very common for individuals to be put into these positions without knowing how to do it. And then they don't know how to hold their teams accountable. So now they have these teams that aren't hitting goals, or they're not able to meet minimum expectations. Well, how are you supporting them? How are you able to find the skill gap?
Sure.
Maybe the answer to that is a little bit isn't as black and white as we think. Maybe they shouldn't be in the role. Maybe
I
they could
agree.
be a great support for somebody else. Maybe they belong in another area, and this just isn't for them. I just don't think the time is always allocated to spend with those individuals to see where they fit. You know, they might have been, it doesn't really matter. They might have been great at just handling all this refi business. Now it's time for them to chase business and go find business, and they just simply can't do it. Well, is there another area? Maybe they can sit in the call center and do more like retail activities. Maybe they should be sales support. Maybe they would be great, you know, working with a top producer. I just think that it's not just finding the gaps and fixing it for them to automatically transform into this like great producer. I think you have to dig a little bit deeper there.
Well, it's funny that you should say that, but actually, the Harvard Business Review has come out that, and this is shocking numbers, 80% of the managers today have never been taught how to manage. And so I thought that number was incredible. And so I actually did a survey, I actually did a LinkedIn survey actually today because I knew I was talking to you. And so asked the same question, were you taught to manage? And so far, the results we just posted it this morning. So far, 70% of the managers said they were not taught how to manage. Does that surprise you or
No,
not?
not
Does
at
it?
all. Not at
No.
all. Again,
And
I've been around a lot of managers. I've been a manager, and I think this is something that should really reconcile with senior leadership if they want to create these good teams. Because again, just because you're good at your job doesn't mean that you know how to manage people.
that's for sure. So let's tie back to what we were talking about. And I know that you've mentioned this before, that you see sometimes at senior leadership where managers will actually accept poor sales results. And it's like they feel they can't ever correct it. Is that what you're seeing?
Yes, I think that maybe they don't they don't know how to manage their team, or they don't know how to fix set, or they don't have the resources to fix the skill set. Maybe it's not something that they can do. Again, there is a difference between coaching and training. They are
Sure.
two very, very, very
Right.
different things. And sometimes we see managers being good at coaching and not training, and sometimes those are good at training and not coaching, but you need
Right.
both of them to motivate your team. I think there is a lot of acceptance, a lot of excuses as to why we're not producing. And recently, the market has given us lots of reasons to give excuses, right? We're
Yeah.
gonna blame rate all day long. People aren't buying because, and they're, you know, they're not wrong, but I'm looking, you know, I look at not what's going to happen next year or in 2 years. Let's look at what's going to happen in the next 3 to 4 to 5 years. We're not going to see what we've seen over the last 10 years,
Yeah.
being compared to 2020. We're just simply not. So we can't just continue to do the same things and the same behaviors and accepting results. That's not how it works.
So do you think, and here's one of the last questions I'll ask you before I ask you to share some takeaways. Do you think the fundamental problem, and this is my own personal opinion, is that managers can get fired for not recruiting, but they never get fired for not coaching?
Yeah.
True or false? Do you
True.
believe true? Why do you think that is? I mean, it just seems like.
If I were leading a team today, the activities would be just as important as the goals. Like that would they would all be in one. There should be a level of asking to sit into a coaching session. I mean, think about some of these really, really, really large companies. Let's use Uber, for example. Their CEO does step-level coaching sessions with their team. So he goes to just a standard manager and does coaching sessions with them just so he can see, you know, firsthand how his employees are working, and then giving them the opportunity to learn from him. and then kind of just listening, and then going back to that, their supervisor or their manager, and saying, here are some things that I've observed. That's a company that takes coaching very, very seriously.
Well, we need to have more of them. That's for sure. So let's talk about a couple of takeaways for our listeners today. The time flew by, and I have to have you come back, and we'll have to talk some more about some of these topics because I'm passionate about them. But a couple of takeaways for our listeners today.
Yeah. So fair is not equal. So we are in goal setting season. We're in budget season. When you're given what we're supposed to budget and what is allocated to produce this next year, fair is not equal. So goals need to be set that are incremental. They need to be looking at not just performance, but market conditions, realistic and individualized. That's just the biggest thing. They should all be individualized. And I have seen it work best that in addition to setting goals, that activities are managed. Also managed and coached to as well.
Well, I can't agree with you more with that because I agree with that. It seems so simple, but not done. So anyway, great talking with you today. And I want to thank our listeners and I want to thank Jen for sharing her wisdom today. And certainly, Jen, do you want to give us some contact information if people want to get a hold of you?
Absolutely. So I am on LinkedIn, Jen Poniatowski. It's a very long last name, so we'll make sure that my contact information is put out on this as well. My email is much simpler, though. It's jenp@cf-pm.com. And I'm happy to hear any feedback or help anyone with any questions that they might have about managing their teams. I'm very passionate about people. I love the mortgage industry, but I love the people more. And I think that there's a lot of activities and a lot of support that our teams need in the coming years in order for them to be successful.
Well, Jen, I agree with you 100% and have to have you back and talk about it because it's so basic, but not so easily implemented for sure. Again, I want to thank our listeners. And certainly, if you would like to listen to some of the other podcasts, go to patsherlock.com and also check out our YouTube channel at patsherlock1. Thanks so much, Jen.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks for listening to Mortgage Manager Playbook. You can catch up on all our episodes by subscribing to receive each week a new show. Don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and team members. If you're looking to increase production, call me to discuss my prospecting sales training program, Ramping Up Realtor Referral Sources. Check out my website, www.patsherlock.com.